ago with the NCRA, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, which is kind of the overarching umbrella organization for us here. And they were, there was a presentation on the music library, specifically music libraries across radio stations. And we were singled out as one that had not gotten rid of our physical selection and not just maintained it, but resumed acceptance of physical records over the last few years. And that's something that I work very hard to maintain, is that we have digital, sure, it's convenient, but there's nothing like having the physical items, the records, the inserts, the liner notes, all the printouts and the handouts that come from community organizations and Canadian stuff and West Coast stuff as well.
And some of, you know, I've done radio shows that highlight the specific qualities of physical records. You know, there's some things that are not, cannot be the same when digitized. Like, I don't know if you have Christian Marclay's record without a cover.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, specific instructions are you put this record in the library without a cover. And so that's the one record I'll grab with my fingers because, you know, it's not supposed to be protected. And so every time you play it, it's going to sound a little different. Or things like 500 lock grooves, you might have that. You know, playing locked grooves off a record, like, what's the digital version of that? It doesn't even make sense. Or or noise cassettes that have specific qualities to them where you're supposed to kind of play around with the technology. Like, you can't.
There was one that my friend had, and I know what you mean. There was one that my friend recommended to me. It was a CD that was supposed to be put in, and it would, like, destroy your CD player. So like, almost Mission Impossible, this tape will self-destruct vibe to it. And it plays with the physicality of the medium more so than just music. We're also working on, of course, as many stations are, digitizing our collection. Preference given to CDs at the moment because they're easy, but I would say the next step would be cassettes just because those fade quickly kind of thing. And we were looking at some of these things, and Jesse and I were noting that many of them are bands or record labels that don't exist anymore, and we possibly may have the only copy around, if ever.
Yeah, and tape, you know, tape deteriorates, so I would say there, you know, there's more urgency also with that, you know, the material might be disintegrating. So it's amazing that you have this cassette collection. I think I'm guessing a lot of stations got rid of cassettes because even the station that I'm at has a massive tens of thousands of item record library, and the cassettes that we have are the ones that we've added in, I don't know, the last decade, because we started adding them again. But I've never seen older cassettes, and there must have been older cassettes around the station. Oh, another thing about the physical stuff is that you can layer things, you know, like at a radio station, you've got multiple turntables and cassette decks. And so that's not really the same when you're playing digital material.
No, the aspect of sound as a collage material is so cool. There's definitely a few artists that I would recommend to both Radioland, who's listening, as well as yourself. There's a very cool project that was started here at SFU in the 60s and 70s called the World Soundscape Project.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Hildegard Westerkamp, Barry Truax,
definitely.
Real pioneers, and definitely I've done shows on my program about them, and several of them are professors emeritus here at SFU and long-standing Vancouver music and arts scene members, and really exploring sound as a delivery vehicle and an experience, more so than just a sense.
I mean, that's part of why I knew I wanted to come out to your station, because I'd met people from Simon Fraser, you know, doing really cool stuff in sound studies, and it just seems like there's a lot of great, you know, great activity going on around sound in Canada, and it seems like there's more support for radio art and experimentation.
We are very thankful to places like the CRF, the Community Radio Fund. The university has helped us out with certain projects, and preservation from the province as well. When your project is up, where can people go to find more information about it?
Yeah, so the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications is on the Internet Archive, and Internet Archive is archive.org. So if you want to see the specific college radio collection, it's archive.org/details/college-radio. If you want to see the ham radio collection, the full Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications, which we call DLARC, that's archive.org/details/DLARC.
Beautiful. Any other organizations you want to give a shout out to?
No, I mean, just, I'm so happy to be up here and visiting so many campus and community stations. It's really inspiring. The conference was really inspiring. So, you know, thanks for opening your doors on a Sunday. It was so nice of you.
Absolutely. We thank you very much, and we hope you'll be back soon.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Jennifer Waits from the Digital Library of Amateur Radio collection from archive.org. She mentioned you can find the collection itself at archive.org, but you can find the article, the profile of CJSF, as well as all the other radio stations that Jennifer has visited and profiled at radiosurvivor.com. You can also find Jennifer's radio show there, which is kind of cool. So go check that out once again, radiosurvivor.com. And we'll make a post about it on cgsf.ca as well, so we can direct you there. Cool. Well, we're going to pivot into the next part of the show. What are we going to do? Well, I'm going to be real with you. Driving up to campus this morning, I was listening to The Record by Boy Genius, and I wept. I just full-on was crying in the car listening to this. I guess I'm a little frayed at this point, a little emotionally raw, and it just got to me. So I'm going to try to do the same to you. From The Record by Boy Genius, this is Not Strong Enough.
Black hole opened in the kitchen. I am the way I am.
Not Strong Enough by Boy Genius. Not sure if it made you cry, but it did to me earlier this morning. Anyway, this is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. I'm going to turn now to an update from a story that you heard earlier this week on Speak Up. On Monday, Magnus played a report from CHLY's Lauren McKenzie about the band The Glass Cage, who are a Nanaimo band from the, well, a Vancouver Island band from the 60s, who recorded a record that was then forgot about and then discovered decades later. Magnus played the story that talked about that. You can hear that on Monday's episode of Speak Up at cjsf.ca. And we now have an update as The Glass Cage played a reunion show for the first time in 50 years on Sunday. We're going to hear a little report on that because CHLY's Lauren McKenzie attended that as well. So let's get into it.
This is a CHLY News update. Following the story of a long-lost record being found, former Nanaimo-based band The Glass Cage was reunited for the first time in over 50 years. Downtown Nanaimo's The Vault Cafe was standing room only on Sunday, February 22nd, as The Glass Cage celebrated the release of their long-lost record, Where Did the Sunshine Go? CHLY earlier reported on the story behind the record when veteran music promoter Marcus Pollard found an unknown acetate record in a Portal Burning collectible store. To his surprise, the record still played, and the music on it was really good. After his discovery, Pollard spent several years researching the unknown psych rock group, The Glass Cage. Eventually, through his work, he connected with the then-teenagers who recorded the unreleased album in the summer of 1968. The record featured Nanaimo's Norm Roth, Wayne Horbord, Clayton Millen, and the late Terry Morrison and the late Doug Hastings. Pollard knew that he and his friend Jason Flower, a musician and archivist out of Victoria, needed to give this album its time in the spotlight. Now, almost 60 years later, the band is getting some rock star treatment as people come out to celebrate the band in the history of the past music scene that once rocked Nanaimo. To celebrate the album release, the band hosted three album release parties in Vancouver, Victoria, and Nanaimo. CHLY attended the event in Nanaimo. The event featured talks from Pollard, Flower, and a Q&A with the original band members. Where Did the Sunshine Go? Was also played in its entirety. As the final record release party came to an end, Pollard said he is happy to have celebrated the band in the city they formed in.
I didn't cry, so that's good. But, I mean, it's totally full circle. This is where it was born. This was where I feel that Jason and Supreme Echo and I, we did right by the band, we did right by the city, and yeah, I'm a very happy guy.
Flower said the event at the Vault Cafe was a perfect conclusion to bringing this record and band back to life.
We're here in Nanaimo. You know, the city had a population of 15,000 people at the time. I just can't believe this sound even came from here during then. But, having learned what bands were coming through, it does all make sense. I think most of all, honoring these musicians and also seeing their families here and knowing that there was no animosity amongst any of the members, given that they were teenagers when they broke up and everything. There's so much love, and the guys are so cool. I mean, I think we're equally just grateful, on all sides to have been able to do this together.
Flower, who created the archival record label Supreme Echo in Victoria, whose team worked on reissuing this record, says this project was special because of the original recording being found on an acetate, not vinyl, record.
I think what's so special is the source, to begin with, being an acetate. For world record collectors, this is the greatest find. I mean, there are unreleased albums and you find tapes and you hope they're not too deteriorated and you transfer them. But to find a one-of-a-kind acetate disc, okay, actually we found two in the end, from Little Nanaimo on Vancouver Island, we have an album that is now redefining the history of Pacific Northwest psychedelia and garage rock. It's really going to mark its place, and I already see this in the international critical acclaim.
Having worked on many records over the years, Flowers says he has never seen such an extraordinary response from people around the world for an archival album by an unknown band.
You have to imagine, this was all based on basically controlling the material not coming out and leaking one song. I usually would publish two teasers on a digital pre-order, but the opening track is such a banger. It was enough to just tantalize the people with.
Even before the whole album was digitally released on February 24th, he says the first pressing of the vinyl was already sold out. Flowers says he hopes this project shows people the importance of saving and documenting music.
I hope that anybody out there listening that has a brother or an uncle or a grandfather that has an acetate, this one-of-a-kind recorded record that has nothing written on it. We know of one in Duncan, if I could just get it out of the guy's hands, you know. We'd love to preserve it for the broader public, you know, so we can continue to document the history of underground on the island, because this album, The Glass Cage, is a soundtrack to your city.
Community members, friends, and family gathered to celebrate the band and reminisce on life 60 years ago. Christine Robertson was there to remember her late husband, Doug Hastings, the original drummer for The Glass Cage, who can be heard playing on the album. She says Doug would talk about his time with The Glass Cage a bit during their marriage of 15 years.
And I actually have known his family for 60 years because we moved to Nanaimo in 1965 and started at the church that his parents were very involved with. So, yeah, I've known the Hastings for forever.
She says it's great to see that everyone's so enthusiastic and interested in the band.
I'm absolutely thrilled that they managed to figure it all out and get it together. Yeah, I am thrilled.
She says Doug never forgot his time with the band and his love for music.
He loved his music. Sitting on the couch, you know, he didn't have his drum kit when we were together. He'd sitting on the couch, tapping the arm of the couch to the music in his head. And the vibrations drove me nuts on occasion.
For C2N News, this is Glenn McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
I must have said something big.
Cage from that record, Where Did the Sunshine Go? Thanks to Lauren McKenzie and CHLY for that news update. I'm Jesse. This has been Speak Up. We're going to hear a quick message and then Antarctica 2005 by Buddy. And then it'll be Democracy Now! I'll see you next week.
This is Bird Note. The bearded reedling is a wetland songbird that's enjoying a boom in both population and popularity. The birds have rufous bodies, a light gray cap, and white faces. But bearded reedlings are named for the male's striking black facial markings that resemble a Fu Manchu mustache, or maybe make up for the rock band Kiss. It gives the bird a stern expression at odds with their diminutive size. Barely larger than a chickadee, the male reedlings are often photographed with their feathers puffed out to near spherical proportions, their spindly legs grasping parallel stalks as if performing the splits. These images are so delightful that search results for roundest bird in the world serve up a gallery of reedlings. The internet's favorite borb is also a remarkable comeback story. Reedlings breed across much of Europe and Central Asia, but in the United Kingdom, where they're called bearded tits, a confluence of harsh winters and habitat loss reduced their numbers to just two pairs by the 1940s. Thanks to decades of intensive reed bed restoration and the bird's capacity to rear several broods in a season, there are now more than 600 breeding pairs of bearded reedlings in the UK today. So, don't be fooled by that adorable scowl. These wetland wonders can give us all something to cheer for. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC, Canada.
Jokes. never cared for a fight, never thought James Bond.